A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hey guys, it's Allie for the Hollywood Life podcast. And as promised, Bonnie and I are back for a day. We're the second day in a row. We are coming in hot with our second podcast this week because we had such a special one yesterday post Oscars. We obviously had to talk all about the fashion and get that to you quick with Melissa Rivers. But today, Bonnie and I are here. We are going to talk a little bit more about the Oscars, but some of the celebrity news that's coming out of there, some new breaking news that we're hearing. And also, of course, we have a fabulous podcast that Bonnie did with Paulina Porizkova at the end of this gossip chat. So make sure you guys stick around for that one. But without further ado, hi, Bonnie, how are you?
I'm doing great. And yes, we have, like, it's been such a busy week for celebrity news. And you guys have to stick around to listen to my absolutely fascinating interview with Paulina Porizkova. She has a new book out called No Filter, but she just talked about so many things that have not been really revealed before by herself. Some of them are from the book, but some are just from our really, really in-depth interview. But anyway, we've got breaking news. So let's talk about it. Lindsay Lohan is pregnant.
I know. And I feel so old. I'm so happy for her because I feel like she really had don't want to say like a rough childhood. She had she was a child star, and that kind of put her in the spotlight a bit. And she kind of went through some addiction issues and drinking, et cetera, et cetera. And so she left the spotlight and found love when she left the spotlight. And now she is going to be a mom. It's so exciting.
I'm really excited for her too. You know, she had such an incredible career as a teenager, Parent Trap, of course, which I watched about 55 times. And Freaky
Girls.
Right. Mean Girls was so good. And Freaky Friday, so many good films. And then she just really, I guess, you know, couldn't handle that fame. It's a lot. And she also had parents who went through, you know, not just in a very contentious divorce, but it was all very dramatic. You know, it was splitting, getting back together and splitting again. And her father got in trouble with the law at one point. So it was a lot. And it really seemed to, I mean, it definitely threw her off course. And I think for, you know, a lot of us, we wondered who'd covered her and thought she was, you know, just, we admired her talent and she was the hottest thing. Like, everyone wanted to book her for a movie, and then to see her go off the rails and not be able to get work. And she's worked so hard on her comeback, for her career.
Yep.
And now that she's found love with Bader Shamas.
Yes. Bader Shamas. He is like a financier. He's not a famous person. And that's like perfect for her. And I think that she's kept a low profile with him, but also kind of introduced him to the public a little. At just like, they'll go to sporting events together. He'll walk a red carpet with her, but she's done such a great job with this comeback. I mean, she really came back and like branded herself and who she wanted to be. She's been sitting front row in fashion events. She did a great Christmas movie this year that people just loved her in.
Yeah, that was really good.
She's looking amazing. She sounds amazing. And so she just was in I believe it was in Milan. Her brother and sister walked on the runway. She sat front row and supported them. And so it's just great to see her thriving. And as we all know, they're doing a musical iteration of Mean Girls, a movie. And the whole original cast is in talks to make some cameos in it. So we'll see, maybe, you know, her character, she comes back pregnant. Who knows how that'll fit in, but very excited to see her as a mom.
Yes, me too. Star of The Parent Trap, becoming a parent.
Oh, how funny.
Yeah. I'm just, it's so good to see her full circle. And also, you know, she's always been very tight with her siblings.
Yes.
And to see that that survived through all that thick and thin that she's been through. Mm. Let's now that's happy couple news, but let's talk about some of the other couple news, because some concern about, again, about Megan Fox and Machine Gun Kelly.
Yep. So yeah, a few weeks after pretty much Megan erased all traces of MGK from her Instagram and, you know, posted some angry Beyonce lyrics and things burning in a fire. She
very dramatic.
She went to the Vanity Fair Oscars party and she was noticeably without her engagement ring.
And that's such a cool ring too. I love her engagement ring with the green emerald and the diamonds set apart in a really interesting design. So it's something you would notice. It's very personal. And so the combo of coming alone, not wearing her ring. Well, there hasn't been any announced split. Clearly they're still having issues. I mean, I'm saying clearly, like I'm not in the room with them, but I feel like Megan has been telegraphing to her fans that there's issues.
Yes. Well, and she's spoken out saying that there was no infidelity and things like that, because originally people suggested that Machine Gun Kelly cheated on Megan with his guitarist, and that was not the case. And so Megan did clear the air on that. But yeah, I mean, reports all said that she was just really, really, really mad at him about something. And who knows? It seems as though if she's not wearing her ring, they haven't necessarily come back from it.
I always hope for a couple that they can work things out when they seem to have been so compatible. I mean, could they have dressed alike any more than they were so coordinated? But they seem to have so much in common in terms of kind of their interest in how do we say that? Like in the supernatural, sort of supernatural type
thing. Yeah, like the spiritual.
Yes, exactly. And they're both parents. So, well, guess we'll just be watching that one closely. Mm-hmm. But, you know, a romance that appears to be picking up steam. Kendall Jenner and Bad Bunny were together at post-Oscar parties.
Yep. So Kendall and Kylie both were photographed arriving along with their friend Hailey Bieber on the red carpet at the Vanity Fair Oscars party. But it seems that Kendall dipped out of there and went to Beyonce and Jay-Z's after party at the
party. I mean, who wouldn't?
Yes, at the Chateau Marmont. Oh. And she was spotted leaving in the same car as Bad Bunny. Now, this comes after they were seen on the double date. They've been seen like kind of canoodling here and there a little bit, but they left the party together too.
Mm-hmm. And a big night. Like, it's not like you don't know that you're going to be seen together when it's Oscars night and you're going to such a high profile profile event as Beyonce and Jay-Z's big party.
Totally. There's paparazzi. There's people inside reporting. They know. So interesting. I mean, people are really upset about it, actually, because people are huge Bad Bunny fans, like love Bad Bunny, all this stuff. And there are a lot of Kardashian, Kar Jenner haters out there. And so people are upset to see Bad Bunny with her. But I mean, like, it's not up to them. So
we're not into haters. We're not into haters.
Yeah.
Let people find love.
Exactly. So you
know, more love, the better.
Exactly. But another kind of like couple, I don't want to call them a couple because it's been so back and forth, but Leonardo DiCaprio and Gigi Hadid were also both at that Vanity Fair party. And there are continued rumors that these two are seeing each other on and off, not exclusive, but definitely seeing each other for a while now.
Yeah. And they went to, not only were they at that party, but they were seen arriving at another private party. I think it was like held by one of the big talent agencies, and it must be the agency that Leo's with. The only thing I've got to say about that is, you know, I like Gigi so much, and I think she's such a pro with her career and clearly a great mom. Is Leo is so obviously not into making commitments. I mean, he just has had a string of girlfriends. The guy's like in his mid 40s.
Right.
She's like the oldest person he's ever dated.
Right.
He gets older, but the girlfriends don't.
Get younger. Exactly. He's like spotted with 19-year-olds. Like Gigi can definitely do better. And, you know, in situations like this, I think that celebrities do frequent the same parties. Like it could very well have been happenstance that they both were going to the same party.
No, I think they were seen getting out of the same car.
Ah, I did not know that. Okay. Mm-hmm. Well, similarly, another couple that I'm really obsessed with is Justin Long and Kate Bosworth. They've been recently dating, like, I think the past year or so. And she was spotted with a big diamond on her hand at the Vanity Fair party. So now everyone thinks that they might be engaged. And they were just like glowing, kissing, so excited, so happy on the red carpet, so cute together. So I really hope that they're engaged. We don't have any details on that yet. But that's the rumor.
Well, for their sake, I hope so too. But you know, the thing that really blows me away is how can Kate Bosworth be the age that she is? Because for me, isn't she always, she's always going to be Blue Lagoon or whatever was that movie was.
Yeah, Blue Crush. That was one of my
Blue Crush. Yeah. Not to be confused with Blue Lagoon with Brooke Shields.
Yes. Blue Crush was one of my favorite movies. And yeah, Kate Bosworth is 40 and she's I know. That's how I feel about Lindsay Lohan.
Yeah.
Totally how I feel about Lindsay Lohan. And then one other couple that was spotted together again at an Oscars after party, or like rumored couple, we can say, Sabrina Carpenter and Shawn Mendes.
Yes.
There's a lot of like budding romance. It's coming.
Yes. It is interesting because he's been the only other woman he's really been spotted with since his split from Camilla was his, I guess his doctor or his trainer, like a doctor who's like really into fitness and everything. And she's twice his age. Right.
Exactly. So I think that, I mean, I'm happy if he's with Sabrina, because I thought that being with the chiropractor was bizarre, honestly.
Well, maybe they were just friends.
They could have been. And he was just like taking her as a plus one everywhere.
Look at that face. Hey, listen, you know, I guess you're equal shade on major age differences, because not into Leo and Gigi, and then not into Sean and his chiropractor.
Yeah.
I'm kind of like, I'm not against Leo and Gigi for age. I'm just against that he's a commitment phobe.
For like, yeah, like her soul.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah. She needs somebody who's going to love her.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I don't disagree with that, especially what she went through with Zane, I think was like a little static and very back and forth and like just such a young relationship. She needs like a man who's going to like take care of her, even though she doesn't need taking care of and she's like independent woman. She deserves somebody who's going to like match her drive and her like commitment to her family, you know, just somebody.
Yeah, somebody with substance.
Somebody to match her. Exactly. Yes. And I don't know who that is, but I hope she finds him.
Yeah, I hope she finds him too. Let's talk though about, since we're all kind of on Oscars and this has all been a lot. Oh no. If you want to throw in there about Khloe Kardashian, she posted, like, talk about people who can't seem to completely split. Now I know they're officially split, but Khloe Kardashian seems to have a lot of positive feelings and for Tristan Thompson. She was super supportive of him after his mom died, his beloved mom. And I respect her for that. But she posted an Instagram for his 32nd birthday that was just so gushingly full of love. And listen, they got two kids together. And she was praising his parenting. Good to know that he's such a good dad. I mean, that's the most important thing. But doesn't it, like, you could do all that without really being so public? Like, why is she so public? And there's constantly rumors that they're going to get back together. What do you think?
Yeah. So, you know, I think that her when she posted the first part of her caption where she wished him a happy birthday, you're truly the best father, brother, uncle. You know, she wasn't like partner and co-parent. You know, she just was like, she kept it there. You know, you're, she talked about his parenting, your love, attention, dances, carpool rides, etc. It means so much to your family of kids. But then she went into like her birthday wish for him. And that's where I was like,
yeah,
Chloe, come on. And like, she knows what she's doing because she turned the comments off on the photo. So no one can comment on it because she knows like it's messed up. Like this guy, I mean,
he cheated on her twice.
I can't imagine twice. God, I think it's
well that we know about.
Right. No, but even more than that we know about, like between Jordan, the girls that there were like videos of like three different girls around that same time as Jordan, like of him in a club. And then the girl that he.
Marilee Nichols.
Marilee Nichols.
Right. Who got pregnant with his third child that he doesn't have a relationship with.
Right. And this, you know, I think that when you have, it's like when you have, when you like, and you're not a public person, you're a private person and you're in a toxic relationship and your friends like almost like hold an intervention and they tell you that, you know, you're screwing up your life. You're wrong. And like, they get mad at you every time you go back. Chloe has that with like a billion people. Like a billion people are mad at her every time she goes back. And so I don't blame her for turning the comments off on this, but like you have to know, like, it is like watching a train wreck every single time. And like, you know, and she's talking.
She just doesn't seem like she can quit him. She just can't quit him.
And she's talking about, and I know, like, I almost think that they are back together because I think she's trying to like set it up for the public to see that he craves change, healing, and transformation. Come on. Like, you know, you're continuing to make your soul proud. Like, I think she's like trying to set it out to be like, he's changed so much. Again, like, you always believe that they change. Tiger doesn't change their stripes, Chloe.
No, literally, Tiger Woods doesn't change his stripes. He just split up with his girlfriend.
Too. I know. Yeah. Another one.
Yeah.
But
there are marriages where one partner cheats and the marriage stays together. And that's just part of their relationship. And they're, you know, the other partner's okay with it, or maybe they cheat too. So who knows? Maybe you can be happy with things like this going on as long as you've got the major commitment. But yeah, you've got to be really prepared for that. I mean, she already broke up with him a couple of times.
Several. I think we're at two hands now. It's disappointing, but you know, you can't, it's like, you can't control who your friends date. You can't pick who your favorite celebrities date.
And you're not going to be doing anything like that.
No. God, no. Rich better not either.
That's right. That's how I feel.
Yeah. No, it's not normal. Yeah. It's not love. Which is,
no, I don't think it's real love. I really agree. Now, there were some no-shows that were pretty notable, I thought. And I really wonder why they didn't go this year to the Oscars or to the Vanity Fair parties.
Sure. Like,
where was Kim Kardashian? Two of her sisters were at Vanity Fair. Chloe wasn't, but Kim's done that party before. I'm sure she was invited. She's been to the Oscars. Ooh, and Bennifer.
Bennifer wasn't there.
I missed Bennifer.
Bennifer wasn't there. Also, last year, Courtney and Travis were at Vanity Fair together. They were absent too. Chris, I believe, was there last year also. And before we go into Bennifer, because I did miss them as well, on the Kardashians, I don't know if Vanity Fair is like an invite only situation, but there are the rumors that the Kardashians are not invited to this year's Met Gala. So I wonder if they're being like,
what?
Off lists.
What?
Yeah.
Really?
Yes. Page Six reported last week that Anna Wintour did not invite the Kardashians to the Met Gala this year.
Oh, I wonder why.
Mm-hmm.
Like, what could have happened?
Yep.
Kim always gets a lot of attention. She wore the Marilyn dress last year. I mean, they all get a lot of attention. That's so interesting. But I don't think Kim would be crossed off of the Vanity Fair list. That right. to me is not believable. I think it was a choice. For some reason, she just didn't want to go. Mm-hmm. Or she's, you know, saving herself for something else. Who knows what commitment she had. Then I don't know why, like, you know, Ben Affleck, he's an Oscar winner.
Yeah.
This is their first year as a married couple. You would have thought it would be an incredible red carpet to make an appearance on. And again, Jennifer's gone many years before. Like she's done.
Yeah. Actors. And this was the first year too, since COVID, that the list had expanded beyond presenters and nominees. Very curious. And similarly, where was Tom Cruise?
Yeah. I was just going to bring that up. Yeah.
Top Gun was nominated. I'm curious if it was similar. Like, I wonder if James Cameron didn't go and Tom Cruise didn't go because they didn't get their main nominations. Like James Cameron didn't get Best Director nom and Tom Cruise didn't get Best Actor nomination. But like, is maybe that's why they didn't show. They were kind of like, meh. But
well, I don't know about James Cameron. I mean, I think they're different. But, you know, there was rumors again that Tom didn't go because Nicole Kidman was going. And Nicole was a presenter, but she didn't have a film that was up for Oscars this year.
Yeah.
So, and really, they've been divorced for like 20 years. I mean, it's been a long time. Really? They couldn't go to the Oscars? And also, those event planners are so good at keeping exes separated. So there's no awkward run-ins.
No.
I'm just not buying that.
Also, there's, so, I mean, gosh, if that was like the case for everybody and like exes, like couldn't be in the same, like, geez, like nobody would go to the Oscars, you know, like I think Nicole Kidman literally dated like everybody in Hollywood. Like didn't she was
she dated Lenny Kravitz.
Yeah. Like, yeah. These people have been in Hollywood forever, you know, it's odd. I wonder why like Leonardo DiCaprio didn't go to the show too, but
he hasn't gone to the show in a long time. I mean, I don't remember him going for a while, but then talk about exes, Vanessa Hudgens and Austin Butler both went to the Vanity Fair party and they were both at the Oscars.
Yep. They were. I mean, I was actually thinking about, I was thinking about, oh my God, Vanessa's interviewing people. I wonder if Austin has to stop at her. Like, and luckily he went to Ashley, but I was like, that was a choice, you know?
I guess that would just be too awkward unless they really were such good friends these days, but you know, they both moved on. So, I thought I'd still want to know about Bennifer. They were out looking at some $64 million palatial estate that they've supposedly just bought, but Jennifer has so much energy. I can't imagine that tuckered her out.
Yeah. I mean, I guess, you know, they went to the Grammys.
Yes.
And maybe like, they were like there, there's no need to get dressed up and go to this. Like if we aren't doing anything right now.
Maybe, but we missed them.
We did. We definitely did. And I always miss a Jennifer outfit moment.
Oh yeah. Totally miss Jennifer outfit moment.
So hopefully we get one soon.
Yes. I'm sure that they'll make an appearance at the Met Ball.
Yes. I sure hope so. But in the meantime, I guess that's a wrap kind of on award season for us for the most part until we pick up with like the fun ones, like the ACM awards, like all our fun country music awards.
And Billboard awards are going to be coming up.
VMAs, yeah, all of those, the MTV movie and TV, all coming up. And of course, the Met Gala in May. So
and Hollywood Live will have incredible coverage as always. But everyone stay on and listen to my interview with Paulina Poroskova, who has this really riveting new book. I mean, I couldn't put it down, no filter. We talk about it, but we talk about revelations from the book, but also she made some revelations. She broke some news in the podcast. So stay tuned and listen.
Yes. Amazing. Well, thank you guys so much for listening and stay tuned.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-.
So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hey guys, I'm here with the Hollywood Life podcast. It's me today, solo, Bonnie Fuller. Unfortunately, my co-anchor, Ellie Stagnita, is tied up at the moment and can't join us. But we have the most fabulous guest, a friend of the show who has been on our Hollywood Life podcast before, and she has big, big news, and it's very exciting, and I can't wait to get started with our interview. So everybody, welcome. Now, author and supermodel and Instagram influencer, Paulina Poroskova. Hi, Paulina.
Hello. Nice to see you again.
Yeah, so nice to see you. And I just have to say that this, your new book, which is out, called No Filter, is really fascinating. It is so interesting. I loved reading it, and I learned so much about you that I didn't know. Like, I'm so glad that you've written this book. And first of all, before we start, I know you've been out speaking about it, and I see you're talking about it on Instagram, but is it available in bookstores? Is it, can you get it on Amazon?
Yes, I mean, I would hope so.
Okay, good.
It's definitely, the release date was November 15th. So it has been in the bookstore since, and it's also available on audio, which I'm reading. I have had people come up to me and say how nice that was, because they felt like they were sitting, you know, with me over a cup of tea while I was telling them about my life.
Yes.
So that's kind of nice. But yeah, the book is definitely out, available, and you should be able to get it anywhere. And if your bookstore doesn't have it, complain.
Definitely. Well, that's good. I just wanted to make sure of that, because I think so many of our listeners and viewers are going to want to go and get this book after they hear our conversation and learn more about it. And, you know, it really, it covers really your whole life. Like, you talk about your childhood. I mean, a very unique childhood, because you grew up in communist Czechoslovakia and your family escaped or were allowed to leave finally. And you moved to Sweden. You became a model, kind of like you didn't even, like, it just kind of happened.
Right.
You were very young when you started, a teenager, and you got global fame as a model. And then you, through your work, you met and fell in love with the Cars lead singer. And I guess, you know, he was kind of a founder of the Cars, Rick Ocasek.
And a songwriter,
Rick Ocasek. And you were only 19 when you met. And you had a long marriage, two beautiful sons. And then he died. You were in the process of divorcing. He died and he cut you out of his will. And you have really had to explore, like, a sort of reemerge as a person. So I just wanted to kind of give this overview. And you talk about a lot, you share a lot in your Instagram, but there's so much more in this book. So tell us, why did you decide to write the book?
Okay. So, and thank you, by the way, for rounding it up so nicely of like, yeah, that is basically my life. And there's obviously a lot more detail to be filled.
A lot. And we're going to talk about it.
Well, that's why people should buy my book.
Oh, okay. we're going to make sure that they're so fascinated that they have to read.
We'll do a lot of cliffhangers and then
the
book to see. But yes, your question was why write this book in the first place? You know, when Rick died and I started gaining some Instagram fame as the lady who cries on Instagram, I had agents come to me wanting to, you know, have a memoir tell all, you know, I guess it was a, it seemed like a natural spot for a betrayed, angry woman to write sort of, you know, a mean piece of work about how victimized I felt and how betrayed I was. But of course, I wasn't going to do that. I loved my husband. I love my husband. I always will love my husband. We did not, we probably didn't have like the most healthy of all marriages, but we had, and I'd say 25 years of love, of real love, however dysfunctional it was love and safety. And so, you know, this is not a person I'm going to tear down. So the book came about by, with Maria Shriver, who started,
really?
Yes, she started her own imprint on Penguin Random House. And she called me out of the blue. I don't know Maria Shriver. I mean, I know who she, Maria Shriver is, but I didn't, you know, I didn't know her personally. So getting a call from her out of the blue was puzzling, to say the least. And she said, I follow you on Instagram and I love what you're doing. And I'm starting an imprint and I would love for you to write a book for me. I will only publish, you know, a small amount of books every year. And I want to make them books that matter, that make a difference in the world, that are, you know, good for people to read. And I would like you to sort of do what you don't do on Instagram. And then she sort of referred me back to her book of devotionals, which is called I've Been Thinking. Lovely book, full of sort of, you know, hope and gratitude. And I think she meant for me to do something like that. And mm-hmm. I completely misunderstood the task and instead wrote these fairly wrenching essays about my life, because that is what had stacked up in me. You know, I mean, it was, I hadn't been thinking about anything else, but sort of going back through my life and where did I go wrong and what did I do wrong? And how can I start again? Where do I start from? You know, I really felt like with the death of my husband, the subsequent will, and then this man that I had fallen in love with after my husband and I had separated left me on the day that I managed to sell my house. Because
in the middle of the pandemic, wasn't it? Yes.
Pandemic, and so I'm losing a house of 30 years. My boyfriend walks away from me. And I literally felt like I was just handed a hand grenade. Mm-hmm. And as I stood staring at it, it blew up and destroyed everything. Everything mm-hmm. around me, everything I knew, everything I relied on, all my safety, all I had built, all I had accomplished, left me standing naked in the rubble. So where are you going to go next? And the book, I suppose, was a first step in sort of just trying to figure out why my life, why my journey had led me up to this rather unpleasant point. Mm-hmm. You know, what, and had I, and I, and, you know, and I don't, even though I felt betrayed, I never see myself as a victim. I believe that I was a contributing factor to the things that happened to me. I don't think I was victimized. And so I needed to take a really good, long, hard look at myself of what I had caused, what I had contributed, and how to rebuild my house brick by little brick, stronger and more and bigger, and to better withstand, you know, life's events.
Yes. And the thing is, now it's been about 3.5 years since Rick died, right?
Yeah.
And you really have, I mean, I can see it. I can just see your progression just from the times that we've talked on our podcasts.
That's right.
And of course, on your Instagram, and then your book explains so much. But you did, I mean, because you were, listen, and you talk a lot about aging and the different view of aging and society's view on your Instagram. But really, you were, and in the modeling world, listen, in the modeling and sometimes the acting world, it's like age accelerates for women.
Okay.
But you really, when he died, you were about 55.
Yep.
Yeah.
55.
So yeah. 55. I mean, still, you were, I consider that still a young woman. Like, you're not elderly. You sometimes refer to yourself that way, but you are not.
Well, you know what? I don't feel elderly, but I am described as elderly by
many people. Oh, okay. That's the Ochoa. So, yeah.
You know, it's not that I believe them, but that is how I am described.
Well, I know it's insane, but really you weren't, but yet you have, and your honesty about having to look back and really reflect and evaluate and then rebuild. And I'm not like your best friend, but I can see the building you've done. But, you know, first of all, I mean, one of the revelations, which most people who have been interested and watched this from afar didn't realize, I think, the gravity and the multiple punches that you got. You already were going through a very difficult divorce with a man that you still love and you still loved, and yet it was not pleasant. And then he died, and that was devastating. But then the person that you had fallen in love with after you were separated then left you too. And you were cut out of your husband's will. So you had like no money. Like, you just, when you say you had a hand grenade, I mean, that's a lot for any person. Like, that really is, you got triple whammy. I mean, quadruple whammied. And yet you kept standing. I mean, you describe the difficulty of it.
Sometimes barely, quite honestly. Yeah. It's not, you know, they say that the most stressful events in one's life is death, divorce, and moving.
Everyone.
I hit the
trifecta.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, you got the trifecta.
Heartbreak. Plus financial issues. I mean, yes, I managed it, and menopause. Let's not forget, I was going through menopause at the same time. Yeah. So, like, literally, it couldn't have been worse. I could have also gotten sick, or one of my children could have gotten sick, and that would have made it worse. But, you know, as things go, it seemed like everything was being taken away from me.
Right.
Where am I going with this? I was going
into what, well, I think that your insights into, and how you're so honest about your devastation and how you desperately tried to find anything to help you cope.
Yes.
And I think that, you know, that reading for that part of the book, for any woman who's going through a divorce, a breakup, a big change of life, you know, I think they will find your insights and what you learn from that, you know, very, very helpful.
It would be wonderful. It would be wonderful if one person does, and, you know, even better with two, et cetera. And I've had, because the book has been out for like a couple of months now, I do have people that come up to me that have read the book. And it's the most touching and the most wonderful thing that has ever happened in my life is women that come up to me that have underlined parts of my book that spoke to them. And sometimes they read it back to me and they cry. And it's such an amazing feeling of connection, you know, that in my honesty and my truth, I think resembles everybody's truth. Because when you really strip away all the layers, our emotions are all the same. They might be, you know, depending on different situations, but it feels the same. The pain is the same. The joy is the same. And so that has been incredibly, incredibly rewarding. And my favorite part is too, that women come up to me with different parts of the book. It's not like everybody underlines sentiment and goes, I really like this. No, I have women that come up to me and thank me about my essay about anxiety, and women that thank me for the heartbreak essay, and then some for the grief, and some for the aging, and talking about beauty and aging, and how insecure I still am with battling with this, like, self-acceptance versus I still kind of want to be pretty. I don't want, you know, I don't, where am I going with this? I don't know. And I have a chapter on height, which usually gets ignored except for really tall women. And then they are always the first ones to go, oh my God.
Right, because you're 5'11".
Yeah, thank you for talking about height and women and tall women and how everybody, the assumption is that if you are tall as a woman, that that's kind of like a good thing. But how bad it can feel at times, because it sort of also defeminizes you to a certain extent, because height's supposed to be the masculine domain. So you may be seen as slightly more powerful, but you're also treading on male territory, which then gets a little dangerous.
Yes, that was really, I thought that was great. And really, I'm really short, so it's something I would have thought of. But yeah, that was I thought, really insightful and wonderful that you brought up even that. You were just 19 when you met Rick, and I didn't realize, and I sort of followed your career, I didn't realize that the two of you were together, maybe because it wasn't public for 3 years while he was still married, and you were carrying on a very involved romance while he was still married before he actually got divorced. And it sounds like you got married pretty much right after that.
Yes.
And
we got married when I was 23 when we got married. Yeah.
So you were still very young. You were, I guess, together then 4 years in this. And you describe yourself. I mean, you admit that you were really naive. You totally trusted that he would, in fact, marry you. And you also just gave fully all of yourself into this relationship. And as an outsider, and maybe somebody now who's older, and I understand the romanticism of how, you describe it, you talk about it in your relationship, that it was just like being in a fairy tale with, you got your prince who totally took care of you, like totally. But now as somebody who's a little older and look back on life, I mean, he was very controlling.
Yes, he was very controlling. Actually exceedingly controlling, and especially in the beginnings of our relationship, he mellowed out a little bit once we had children, and he knew that he had me, I wasn't going anywhere, then he got a slightly easier. But it's what I construed as love. To me, I thought, I came from a pretty dysfunctional home, as you can read in my book. And I didn't know what a loving couple was. I had never seen an example of two people together who loved each other. I always saw drama. Everything was super dramatic. There was chases and fights and, axes flying with my grandfather. And,
oh, God.
And, my mother, grabbing knives and was going to go and stab my father. I mean, it was, I didn't talk about everything in the book because, some of it is a... I don't want to throw shade on anybody. But it was, I had a very dramatic childhood growing up, even just seeing how people behave between each other. So I thought.
And lots of people think that is how, big romances are, that they're dramatic like that.
Exactly. That it's all, these grand gestures and tears, and then the get back togethers, which are just like, oh my God, I love you so much, I can't live without you. And so I thought I had hit the jackpot. I thought I found a man who was able to love me the way that I wanted to be loved, which was completely, obsessively, wholly. And I didn't realize that by immersing myself into this great love, that I was going to lose little pieces of myself, or that I was giving up my control as a human being. Like I just didn't think far enough. I was 19. I was a kid. I was an idiot, but as the marriage kept going and I started growing up, I started understanding little pieces of this. And I'm like, oh, wait a minute. That's not quite right. And I think I'm not going to do that anymore. And the more I did that, the further away my husband backed off, because that was not what he had signed up for. He had signed up for me being 19, I guess.
Yeah, because he really he didn't want you doing certain things with your career. Like it affected your career, not being able to, take.
But you know what? It affected his too. It's not that he just said, sit at home and take care of everything and I'm going to go out and work. He also neglected his career in favor of me. He didn't do certain projects because he needed to be around me. And so we both took hits in our careers because we were so full of loving bubbles that
this obsessiveness.
Yeah.
Do you know, was he like that with he had two other marriages. Was he like that with his two other marriages?
Well, I wouldn't know, obviously. I would have to have asked the wives, which would be a very awkward conversation. I have no idea of knowing. But I know he was unkind in talking about his ex-wives. And that is a really good indication of how somebody will turn against you one day. And I didn't figure that out until the boyfriend that left me early warning flags I would have heeded had I known better. Because I sort of walked out there, whatever, age of 53, 54, being like, whoa, I'm in love again. It happened. Isn't it wonderful? But I fell in love again like a 19-year-old. I sort of repeated the same mistakes that I did when I was 19 because the things I had learned were not so much about how to fall in love. They were about the relationship itself, how to conduct yourself in the relationship where you're taking care of everything and you're minding the children and you're minding the household and you being the captain of the ship. I was a really good captain of the ship. My kids will agree with that too. So I knew how to be a captain of the ship, but I didn't know. But I, when I first fell in love, I became the damsel in distress instead of the captain of the ship.
Yeah, the princess again.
Yeah.
With your rescuer prince.
Yeah, exactly. Please help me out. I'm drowning. Yeah.
Do you feel like you say that you had 25 years of real love and happiness? Was it not until 25 years together or 25 years of marriage that you started to do enough independent things that that Rick began to pull away from you?
It's kind of a good question. I think it's the boiling frog syndrome. You sort of don't notice it until you're boiled. So there's no markers really for me. I just know that I felt really happy. He seemed really happy. We had these two wonderful children and my wonderful stepkids and all like his side of the family that I adore. My stepkids and my step-grandkids are like the biggest gifts in my life that I got for free just by marrying this guy. And then my family, everything seemed so, safe. And I think that's the part that was in a way the most shocking to me with Rick's death was this, even though our marriage wasn't working, and for a while, nobody gives up a marriage because you're unhappy one day, right? This is years in the making. But little by little, first you try to talk about it and you try to fix it. And I would suggest vacations. I would suggest therapy. And he would always just sort of turn around and at first he tried therapy. And then he turned around and said, therapy's not working for me. So just go and do it yourself. Which is always a bit of a problem because then you
just
become smarter and your partner is not on the same train.
Yeah, it accelerates it. But it's like you had a very kind of hot chemistry. You had a great sex life for a long time. And then, you've talked about this even before you wrote the book, then he stopped even touching you. That happened gradually. Was it like one day it was normal for you guys? And then he just didn't want to have not even sex, but didn't even sound like he was sort of affectionate with his, putting his arm around you or kissing or anything.
No, I think he was angry at me. In retrospect, I can see that he was angry at me. But back then I didn't know that because he wouldn't talk to me about it either. So I really didn't understand where this was coming from and what was happening to him, because he wouldn't let me in. And now I think it was because of his pride, his enormous pride, and, you know, some level of narcissism that he couldn't open up and be vulnerable with me, because maybe he thought that I would reject him based on his weaknesses, which is such an awful thing, because really you love somebody because of their vulnerabilities, because of their weaknesses. And I tried my hardest to get him to talk to me, and he would, I hit a brick wall. He would frequently say, "Why do we need to talk about stuff? Like, why can't you just be happy?" And that's how he shut me down. And obviously it's not going to work out for, you know, living in a relationship like that.
But did it happen suddenly?
He's not touching me. Yes, as you said, our relationship was very much based on this romantic ideal of, like, we're so hot for each other all the time. Mm-hmm. And my girlfriend's always, I remember, we're always slightly shocked about, like, how much sex we had, you know, even 20 years in, they'd go, really?
Jealous. They were jealous.
Well, no. And I'd go, you mean you don't? Like, I didn't know this was in any way, you know, out of the ordinary. I thought everybody was doing this. So and then I found out, no, not maybe everybody. But no, that was also gradual. It was all so gradual that it was sort of hard for me to understand where that point came, where I thought, I've been completely erased. And now what do I do? Like, now that I'm a non-human being, non-woman, how do I find myself? Who am I? Where am I going? And then life had some more surprising events to throw at me. So that thing I have to say, though, about being handed a grenade is that if you accept the challenge, which it is, it's, are you gonna rebuild? Are you gonna stay alive? Or are you gonna fold? And I don't blame people who fold, because I was pretty damn close
What kept you from folding?
My children. And I think this is probably true for a lot of us, is like that one little thing, which was my children had just lost their dad. Mm-hmm. They couldn't lose their mom too. So I had to prop myself up.
Yes.
No other option for me. You know, and of course, you know, at the time, sometimes I think, you know what, I'll just prop myself up for now. And then once I know they're okay, then I'll see. I'm leaving my options open. But of course, it's a good thing to push things off up until tomorrow, because, you know, you do sometimes feel better the next day or the day after that or the day after that. But I hit like my very lowest point. I think it was November, after my husband's death and my boyfriend's leaving and COVID and the loss of.
So this was just after he died, I think.
In September.
So it was a couple.
No, in September. And then it was until the following year. So it was almost a year later when COVID hit. Well, it hit like 4 months later, but my boyfriend left and, you know, and I sold the house and then I didn't have a place to live in New York anymore, all of that stuff. But this is where I really hit the bottom. And I went to, and I was, I knew I was perilously close to doing self-harm. And so I tried to call clinics to see if there was any depression rehabs that I could check into. And guess what? Nothing was open in COVID. So too bad if you're depressed in COVID. And I couldn't figure out what to do. I was drowning. And a friend of mine offered me his house in Costa Rica because he owned some properties. And he said, take your boys, come over here, stay a month. You can be miserable in the sunshine. It'll feel better to be miserable in the sunshine.
Yes. Good point.
Yeah.
Everything's a little better in the sunshine and the warmth. Yes.
Yeah. And the beach. And, you know, so I went to my son, who, of course, they're like, you know, they're grieving their father. my son is in the middle of doing his master's degree. My younger son is doing finals for school, for college. And I said, Jonathan, I'm really sorry, but you're going to have to take me to Costa Rica. I know it sounds insane, but I beg you. And
how old were the boys at that time?
25 and 21, something like that, or 20 and 24. And Jonathan, who's the most obliging human being in the world, that will always say, of course, mom, burst out into tears, put his head on the kitchen table and just sobbed and said, mom, I can't, I just can't. And obviously your own unhappiness is one thing, but your child's unhappiness is another. And that one is even harder, I think, to a certain extent. And my heart was absolutely breaking. I had no other way to go. And so I burst out in tears and I put my head down on the table. And I said, Jonathan, I wouldn't ask you if it wasn't for a matter of life and death. And I think that sort of made him, this mother that had always captained the ship and that could take care of everything and do everything and withstand everything, was shattering in front of his eyes. And I think that was shocking for all of us. And then my younger son, who's always been the one that's like, oh God, I have to take out the garbage. Oh,
yes. Like so many kids. Yes.
And he's the one who came in and just looked at me and said, mom, I'm going to take you. Don't worry. I got you. And then we all ended up going to Costa Rica. And we, in the COVID thing, everything was complete madness. You know, there was like, the airports didn't know what was going on. The flights were delayed and like they were half full and everything was off. And so we got on the plane. We get into Costa Rica. We walk off the plane, walking through passport control. And the guy in the passport control looks at my passport and says, you can't come in, lady. Your passport's expired.
Oh, no. Oh.
And this was another thing.
Yeah.
It was just like, that was the straw that sort of broke the camel's back. You know, it was a silly little thing, really.
Not really, though.
Yeah. But what ended up happening is that I crumpled to the floor in the middle of the airport with all these people there. And I started howling and I was sobbing uncontrollably and nobody could talk. I've never lost control like this in my life, ever. They had to come and scoop me up and put me in a wheelchair and they put a blanket over my head and rolled me right back to the same plane.
Oh my God. We have to, I'm sure that your book is going to be a movie. This scene is going to be incredible.
The scene is not in the book.
You can add it. You can add it into the screenplay.
Yeah, exactly. Oh yeah. That happened.
So you never made it into Costa Rica.
And we just sat on the same damn plane for another 6 hours.
And the thing is, during COVID, it was really hard to get passports renewed too.
Impossible. Yeah. Exactly. So
it wasn't like you could go back, go to the passport office, get it fixed, and go back in a week.
End of my wits, I checked myself into a Tony spa because that was the only thing open for a week. And they had all kinds of little woo-woo things, walk around with a gong and, let your troubles go one at a time on the sound of the gong. And I was like, I have nothing to lose. I'm going to do it all. And so I did. And, and I stayed alive. So.
So the gong worked too.
Yeah, the gong totally worked.
Oh my God. That's incredible. Well, I'm very glad that it did. And how do you feel that you began writing on Instagram and you kind of focused on your feelings about aging? What made you decide to start to
explore that and be open about your feelings about aging?
Well, I never decided to be open about anything. I've always been open. It's just people didn't listen. People didn't have a direct connection to me. It was always translated by a journalist or the press. So they only asked me what they wanted to know, mostly diet tips and, you know, beauty tricks and, you know,
right,
what's the fabulous life of a model? So nobody was actually interested in knowing anything except for their already assumed picture of me, to confirm their already assumed picture of me. And so, you know, Instagram provided me with a direct megaphone and a direct line to people who were interested. And so it's not like I suddenly became open. I just finally was heard, as opposed to just being this two-dimensional image on the page. And that's what changed, was the media of it, not me. It's always who I've always been.
And did you find, were you surprised that you had, that you developed an audience there of followers that really wanted to hear what you had to say?
I am still shocked. I hit a million followers on March 1st and I was like,
congratulations.
I don't understand how this stuff works. And I think maybe that's also a part of the attraction to me, is that I really don't understand how this stuff works. I'm just kind of plowing ahead with my heart and who I am. And I don't, there's no premeditation to it. There's no, you know, I'm not trying to sell products. I'm just wanting to involve people in conversations and be able to speak my mind, because for so long I wasn't able to. And so this, like, how far it's gone, it's always takes me by surprise that anyone cares, really, honestly, and that this many people care. And, you know, this is in the old days, in the good old days, as they say, which I don't think we're all that good. I would walk down the street and I would get comments from men. I would get the, you know, hey, you're the Sports Illustrated chick. Hey, babe, you want to date? You know, all that kind of stupid stuff. And I mean, sometimes I would be vaguely flattered, but mostly it was just annoying. And I didn't get any of that. I haven't gotten any of that for years, just due to my age. What I get is women calling out to me across the street going, Paulina, I love you. I follow you. Thank you. You're making me feel better about aging. You're making me, you know, I feel like you held my hand when I was going through my divorce, or, you know, my husband also died and you've helped me. I mean, that the change of how I am perceived now by women, you know, as opposed to the way I was perceived as just some sort of a sex object, an inflatable doll that, you know, rolled around the streets. It's like I'm...
Well, I don't know if you were quite perceived like that. I saw you in a lot of fashion shows and I perceived you as an incredible model. Like you were just so, you were really good at, you know, you look beautiful, but there also is an art to showcasing the clothing, which I think is completely lost on the runway models I see today. But anyway, that's a diversion.
Yeah, that's a different topic. But yes, I mean, you know, our job was to make clothes look good. It wasn't personalities necessarily. It was to make clothes look good. And so I do believe in giving everything I do 100%. So I wasn't going to skimp on modeling whether I liked it or not. It was my job and I was going to do it to the best of my ability. But I, you know, for so long, I felt like I only got to be a real person to a very few people around me. And to the rest of the world, I was either a political refugee, you know, stinky communist, you know, the enchanted Cinderella model that had everything and married to rock star, and, you know, people envied me and people wanted to be me and they desired to own me. But that's all speaking from the point of view of somebody who sees an object, not an actual human being. So I've only recently sort of been allowed to join the human race, thanks to my age. Yay!
Did you ever have discussions about this, about aging and about the perception of beauty with your husband when he was alive? Was that something that you talked about?
I had given a crap. That would have been absolutely and utterly uninteresting to me. And I did.
He would have been uninterested in it?
He would have been absolutely uninterested in it. He only had a few things that he was interested in, and he didn't really necessarily think I was all that interesting or fascinating. So then when I met a man who actually thought I was interesting, that was a really nice departure. Like, whoa, somebody thinks I'm smart and that what I say actually has some value, and they will actually converse with me about things I want to talk about. Well, what a novelty. And I did talk to him about the age.
That was the boy, your boyfriend.
Yeah. Yeah. So-called boyfriend.
That's amazing to me to hear again from you that you were in love and had a relationship that you considered a good marriage for 25 years, and that you're now saying that your husband didn't consider you interesting and didn't have an interest in listening to what you had to say.
I think that he thought that I was smart. He had said it earlier, you know, when things were good, he would say that he, you know, that was very beautiful and that I was very smart. And so he would compliment me. He would give me lots of affirmations. But from the very beginning of our relationship, you know, I was 19, he was 41. Of course, I thought he was 36 because that's what he said he was for a while until we were going to get married, and then he had to come clean with his age. But from the very beginning, because he was a grown-up to me, and I was, you know, still, I just thought he knew everything. I just thought, well, he's the authority on everything. He's been married, he's had children. He knows what works, what doesn't, and he would claim that authority. He would say, I know what doesn't work in a relationship. Being apart from each other doesn't work. So you are going to have to stay close, you know, blah, blah, blah. And this doesn't work. And I was like, yes, sir. Yes, sir. Got it. Yes, absolutely. You know, it was like God speaking. And he would talk a lot about his work. And of course, my husband was enormously talented. And he was, he wrote beautiful poetry, and he took photos, and he did art. I mean, he really was an artist, and he could really spot good art in other people too. And so this was mostly the topics of conversation, because that's what he was interested in, and so I would be interested in as well. And if I tried to bring up classical music or something that I had read, he'd just start yawning and look around. And so I honestly assumed until I was about 50 years old that I was boring. That my interests were just so lame that, you know, why would anybody want to talk to me about that? Because that's clearly boring. It bores my husband. So,
well, the other thing that struck me in the book, and that I think will be, you know, very helpful to other women, is how you, again, like, following on what you're saying, that you thought he knew everything and he was like a god, you totally gave up financial control of everything. Like, you were bringing in a lot of money for a long time and you never thought anything of it. Like, it just went in the joint bank account and he took care of it, and you assumed everything was fine until it wasn't fine and you didn't have as much money.
Yeah. And then suddenly I didn't have any yet. I think a lot of it's funny how women do that. Men,
yes,
don't ever just hand over their finances to their wives and say, okay, you take care of it. Just let me know if I'm overspending. And so many of us do that. Yeah, I believe this was love forever. Why would I think about like this could, you know, what will happen if it ends? The fact that he had already been married twice and divorced twice somehow did not penetrate my brain at all. Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, duh. But
because yeah. It was romantic love, and lots of women fall into romantic love.
Yeah. And I, of course he knew everything. So, you know, yes, all of our money goes into a joint pot, and then we use our joint money for everything that we need to do, regardless of, you know, it doesn't matter who's putting what into the pot. It all goes into the pot. And of course, I didn't realize until he died that there was a trust fund set aside that I wasn't allowed to touch. That hadn't gone into the pot. That was kept separately so that I couldn't touch it. And that's kind of where most of the money was, too. Yeah.
Do you have any idea yet why he cut you out of the will?
Oh, I do think, well, you know, I write in the book that I think it was kind of almost a crime of passion, sort of a thing. I didn't see it as that when it first happened. First I was just shocked.
And, yeah, you must have been.
The betrayal of this man that I'm, you know, waiting on hand and foot while he's recuperating, and then he doesn't want me to have anything if he dies. I mean, the idea that he didn't want me to be provided for after 35 years, and that he lied, that he, in order to achieve that, he said I had abandoned him, which is a legal term, not an emotional.
Right. He had got that from his lawyer.
Exactly, his divorce lawyer. I was so utterly devastating to me.
But yeah, now, it's an emotional and financial and a security hit. Like it's a blow in every way, like all of those different ways.
Yeah. But now when I look back at it, and actually it was somehow, I think during writing the book, people keep asking me if it was cathartic to write the book. And I feel like, well, not so much, because all of those, it's not like I, you know, dredged out these things that I hadn't known were there and put them on paper. No, they were all stacked up inside me and they were weighing me down. So in the way of like, I took the bricks out of myself, I put them on the floor. Yes, it was cathartic in that way. But the catharsis was when I realized I had to write something about us falling in love, because I had written a lot of the grief and the shock and the betrayal and all the dark essays. And then I actually, the woman that I was working with, that was my reader, said, I really want to know why you love this guy.
Because yeah, I know. You kind of, you wonder, like, after all this.
Yeah.
Why the hell?
So I had to sit down and then write about falling in love. And that was kind of amazingly releasing. I hated doing it. When I first sat down to write about how we fell in love, like every bone in my body just wanted to rebel and make it bad. I was like, I should have known from the start. I had so much. I did have bitterness in me at that point.
Of course.
And then I forced myself to drop that and to sort of try to recapture how amazing it actually was, and how enchanting it was, and how sparkly and bubbly and perfect. And once I allowed myself to go there, I think it was really the first time where I could start mourning my husband too, because I could finally think, oh God, this is what I lost, you know, not just what his presence, but I had lost also my great memories of him. Through his will, he made me just remember him in the worst possible light.
Yes.
So writing those chapters, the Beauty and the Beast chapter and the Falling in Love chapter, made me remember. And when I remembered, it's sort of like it opened up the door for me to sort of realize that with his obsessive love for me and his control and how unhappy he must have been when I started distancing or growing up. I wasn't distancing, I was growing up, but yes, I was doing therapy, and yes, I wanted him to react a little differently. And yes, I started to have more demands. I started to have needs that I didn't have in the beginning. And he didn't understand it. He didn't want it. He had not signed up for that. Again, I grew a lot from 19. He didn't grow at all from 41.
I mean, yes.
That's just math. So he was always the person that I had met, and I changed. So I can, now I kind of see, I understand the progress of, you know, the woman that he loved changed and became somebody different, and somebody who eventually acquired contempt for him for not following with me, for not walking down the path with me. And I don't think he ever stopped loving me. I think this nasty action at the end was, in fact, in his weird way, the proof that how much he still cared, that he wanted to hurt me, that he wanted to injure me, because he must have felt injured himself.
Yeah, absolutely. I can completely see that, and I can see why it took you so long to be able to come to that insight. So now you have grown, you fell in love and then were heartbroken. Are you open to new love? Is there any new love on the horizon? Would you approach it differently? I guess you would approach it differently.
Oh my.
Or do you think you're going to be the damsel again?
Oh no, that is never happening again. Now I read this really amazing book. I so recommend this to anybody who's in a relationship or wants to eventually be in a relationship. This book called Us by Terry Neal, I think his name is. And it's all about seeing a relationship.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Relationship as a unit, and how we don't have the time for me to go into it, but God, it sort of opened my eyes to a lot of the things. And I was reading it when I was single, and I thought, oh, the next man I meet where I feel like the potential for a relationship, like where I really think that this is going to go somewhere, I'm going to make them read this book before we get anywhere for real. Mm-hmm. And so I can say I've just handed that book off to somebody.
Oh, okay. Well, listen, I think that I think that's a very good use for a book. And I totally wish you good luck on this next love adventure. And I'm looking forward to hearing more about it, whether it's through your Instagram, through another conversation.
You're the first person I've told, by the way.
So
this is still kind of, moderately private. I mean, you know, obviously being on a podcast now, it's maybe not so private, but I'm still just, you know, it's still early days.
But I'm happy that you've come to a point where you feel that you need to give the book to that person.
And the fact that I, you know, for a while, I didn't even know that I could ever trust anyone again to want to be in a relationship. And I'm still having a pretty hard time with the trust issues. That's something that I still have, that's my work is cut out for me. I have to work on the trust.
Yeah. And I think, well, they will too. So you've just given it to them. So they haven't necessarily read it yet.
Oh no, he's read it.
Oh, okay. And he was okay with it.
He loved it. And we had the most amazing conversations about ourselves and where we're going and what we want. And yeah, it's a, it was a fantastic conversation piece, actually.
Oh, okay.
Oh yeah, yeah. So no, we're that far off.
Okay, and you know what? You just started glowing, and you have a big smile, and you're giggling,
I'm sweating a little bit.
Well, Paulina, I wish you so much luck in that new relationship and look forward to hopefully hearing more about it. I mean, I'd love, I think everybody who has sort of come to know you, at least, you know, through your Instagram and your writings, would just want to wish you the very best. And you so deserve to have a love that is mutual and equal and that, you know, brings you a lot of comfort and satisfaction. And like that is a safety, but not in a negative way, like safety.
Well, not safe and boring. Yeah.
Yeah.
I know what you mean, but you know what? I think we all deserve that. What we all deserve is to have at least one person that will look at us and really hear us. And really hear for you for who you are and what you are. You don't have to pretend you're better. You don't have to scream to be heard. You know, just somebody that will truly hear you.
Yeah, and that is truly committed to you as a whole person.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, with warts and all.
Exactly. Well, I don't know of any warts you have. So. I don't see
all
any.
On the inside.
Well, and so I wish you best of luck with that. And really, for all of our listeners and the viewers, everybody should get a hold of Paulina's book, No Filter. It is a really wonderful read. And I'm predicting that we will be seeing a movie, a TV series, because it's just so, it's so enriching and interesting. And yeah, you've got lots more to add to it for your.
Oh, thank you. Yes. You're so kind and I so appreciate it. And as always, how fun is it to talk to you?
So great to talk to you. Okay. Well, we'll keep following your adventures. Thank you so much for talking with Hollywood Life. And for all those listeners, make sure to keep tuning into our podcast and pressing the like button and subscribing. Thank you, Paulina.
Thank you. It was such a pleasure.
Such a pleasure. Okay. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Bye.